I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. A busy weekend of football, a full house today, so I'll not waste any time in the introductions. I'll just get it started. It is Miguel Delaney to my left, Jonathan Liu directly opposite me. I have accidentally just compared his wife to a Nazi. That's something for off-air conversations. But
HR,
he's now forgiven me. HR are fine with it. And Jack Pitt-Brook, who, in an amazing twist, was the late one today.
Yeah, I know. I'm disappointed in myself. I've let myself down. I've let my family down. I'm going to have to somehow win back the respect of the fans. I'm going to do like an open letter, which is written as like a note on my phone.
On your twine.
And then I'm going to tweet it.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it.
Apologising to the fans, because that is actually the only way to atone for anything you do wrong.
That is the optimal way to express contrition.
I'll probably follow it up with an Instagram post of me looking really sad. And I'll repeat the text from the note.
Yeah.
And then I will offer back money to any fans who travelled to download.
Yeah, always
podcast.
Remember to praise the fans, by the way. Yeah. Fans were amazing.
Meanwhile, we will wear T-shirts with your face on it, as a kind of gesture of support for your act of contrition.
I thought that was only done in support of racists.
That's the joke.
Very good. Very good start. In case you hadn't noticed,
we can cut all that.
There wasn't a load of good football this weekend.
There's no football.
Well,
at the
there was in the Bostic Premier Division playoffs.
There wasn't a Bostic. Oh, you know, if you want, we'll get to that later on, because I know you're probably dying to talk about it.
I didn't watch a second of Barclays this weekend. I'm too real for that now.
No Barclays injected straight into your veins.
Pure Barclays.
It started on Friday night as well. Brighton beating Man United.
I forgot about that actually.
It feels a long time ago.
It really does. Is that last season?
Well, it might well be Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford's last game for Man United if things keep going the way they are.
I don't think Rashford. I think Rashford will be all right. Although it's not great there.
Congratulations to Brighton, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I mean,
they're your second team, aren't they, Ed?
Yeah, I think they've done a great job. I've got a good friend who works for them, so I don't wish them any ill. And they bought well, and they survived on a pretty small budget. Doesn't mean they're safe next year or the year after, but they've done a good job so far. And considering they had a heinous run in, like the last five games were all against like top six clubs, I think the fact that Man City ran away with the league has been a huge boost to them this season, and maybe next year the cards won't fall quite nicely, but they're a club that recruits well, so I think they'll probably be all right.
Yeah, Chrissy Hughton done well again. Yep. Solid manager.
Everyone seems to like Chrissy Hughton. I've never had much to do with him, but everyone that's had dealings with him likes to talk about how great a guy he is. Yeah, the Steve Stammers, the Henry Winters of this world. Any other thoughts on United Friday night? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I was. I had it on in the background while I was doing something else. don't make that face.
Right, if you've got no more thoughts on Manchester United,
Martial, actually,
give us Martial, give us the gossip on that
for his future. There, I'm back. We'll probably have a line today. Mourinho,
he's too good.
Would be very open to. Well, he's been really frustrated with Martial over the past few days. Thinks he should have taken his chance. The comments after the match were very conspicuous. About how, like, this is why Lukaku always plays.
Yeah, people always say to me, why always Lukaku? Why not these other guys? And then he kind of had a go at journalists for asking him that question in the first place, saying that he sees them in training, etc. But he's like, this is why Lukaku. This is why always Lukaku.
A friend of the podcast, John Bruin, had a good tweet on Friday night where basically he said, it is amazing how often Mourinho predicts the future in these things, but he only tells
you afterwards. Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
He does have a gift, let's say.
From what I've heard, Mourinho would of course be open to offloading Martial for Willian plus money. And I think that'd be such a good deal for Chelsea. I mean, Willian's a good player.
I think Willian's excellent.
Yeah, he's excellent. But I mean, taking into account his age, I think Martial has a much higher ceiling as a player. All right, it's still potential, but like,
how old's Willian
in a Chelsea squad that looks, that has been looking really old in the last year or two, and which needs an injection of, you know, exciting attacking players. But to, given that Morata's not convinced yet,
I think Martial could be absolutely
Martial would be fantastic.
There.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you don't know
would he play in that same position?
Don't know
who
the coach is going to be either.
On the left, of the front three.
I suppose I could alternate. I mean, Martial, I think we've all been a little bit, just because Mourinho has such a specific approach for forwards, or such specific requirements of them, that it kind of, and because Martial has to fit into that, then you kind of forget how versatile Martial can be going forward, or what he can do.
I think he's not had anything like a proper run of games to build. He's better. He's been 3 games in, 3 games out, and it's almost as if you need to build momentum in a position to perform at your best at it.
Yeah. There are plenty of clubs that want him, though, right? I mean, I think they'll be queuing up.
Yeah.
Spurs have been in for him in the past, haven't they?
Yeah, Juve.
But you feel like he'd. I mean, I guess if they're interested in talking to Chelsea about it, then maybe they would be. But I would have thought that United would just want to get him out of the Premier League. So it just lessens the embarrassment when he eventually comes good, right?
Well, then Mourinho wants a player off Chelsea and Willian, and then he likes a player off Spurs and Alderweireld. So,
but that is easier because of the contract situation. There's a year left, is that, on Toby?
No, so he's got a clause which kicks in some. His current contract goes up to 2020, but there's a 25 million release clause which kicks in the summer of 2019.
That's what
that being the
done.
Case, okay. Like the argument goes that Spurs are better off selling him for 40 now than 25 next year. Yes. And that's why Spurs are probably going to get pushed into it, given that Toby said there is, you know, he's not going to sign anything they've put in front of him yet.
And fair play to him. He's played well, I guess, and you earn a move and more money for your family and whatever. United story will be out later on today on the website, independent.co.uk/football. If you don't follow Miguel already on Twitter, then it's probably best that you don't. on Saturday, Stoke were relegated. I can't remember a time when the team in 19th was relegated before the team in 20th. Anyone seen that before? In the Premier League?
No.
Not to my memory, no.
I mean, it's a tiny detail and a very pointless one that no one's going to care about.
West Brom went ahead of them.
But when Stoke were relegated at about 2:30 PM on Saturday, they were 19th, but they were relegated, and West Brom were below them with an extra game.
Yeah.
Who can still survive? And indeed, West Brom ended up winning, right?
They beat Tottenham.
Southampton, were Southampton to go down, which is obviously still possible, you would say they're one of the best squads to go down in Premier League history. Where do Stoke stand in that regard?
I'd say that
Stoke
were dreadful. I think they've got a few. Arguably, Shaqiri and Joe Allen are amongst the two best players to be relegated.
Solid centre half.
Not for me.
Shawcross
was good a few years ago. I think he's not as good now as he was.
Okay, Shawcross is at a bad
season.
That's
why they keep buying centre backs. Zuma, Martin Zindi.
Yeah.
But
recruitment. The last two summers of recruitment have been poor.
Yeah. Joe Allen and Shaqiri could play for top six teams, or they could be in top six squads.
The other side of it as well is, like, when Lambert came in, one of the big things I'd heard he did was fitness, double sessions, get him hammering in that regard. And then what happens? Crunch time of the season, the amount of late goals they concede.
I've not seen a load of Stoke in the last kind of 2 months under Lambert, but they were dismal. They were really bad. They just didn't, not cohesive. They went ahead through a lucky goal, basically, a deflected free kick, and then just cack themselves. They just didn't look like a team that had any idea of how to play football. And Shaqiri is obviously the most talented player they have, but it never really looked like coming together.
The goals they conceded were just absolutely abominable for a team that, I mean, I think the first goal, they ended up getting countered like 4-on-4 or something, or maybe even 4-on-5.
I think they're outnumbered at 1-0 up, and doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got you know, you're ahead in a game you absolutely have to win, and you're getting countered 4-on-4, and you still can't prevent the shot.
Yeah. I was speaking to a former Stoke player recently, and he said that he thinks the problem is that, like, the downside of Mark Hughes's changing the club and transition to this more attacking side of play is that they lost all the really good characters that helped knit the dressing room together. And even players like Glenn Whelan and John Walters, who weren't necessarily first teamers anymore. Like, selling those two meant that all that kind of core from the Pulis era had kind of gone, basically, except for, I think, Adam and Crouch, who were certainly fringe figures.
Shawcross.
Yeah, and Shawcross. But that meant that with the new players coming in, there's like, you kind of get this at Arsenal, people would say, when all the senior players left, is that there's no one really to enforce the standards. And you've got, you know, Peter's had disciplinary problems, Berahino's had disciplinary problems, Heze's barely been there all year. They've had all kind of this kind of problems that don't happen in a kind of inverted commas good dressing room.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see Butland's quotes?
No.
Basically, Butland said that the recruitment had been farcical.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and he literally named about he talked about 7 or 8 players that had been signed without any real clear reason of you know what they were meant to be doing there. It's absolutely extraordinary what Butler was saying. So he was clearly talking about people like Hesse, like Bojan, or you know Imbula,
Afellay. He's gone missing again as well.
You know, and it was like I couldn't quite believe it when I was trying to find the source. I think it was literally just you know mixed zone afterwards. And there's clearly a huge amount of anger in that squad about people who have come in on what one would imagine are massively inflated wages to what your Whelans and your Wilkinsons would have been on, and just haven't pulled their weight.
It's kind of like, it's interesting because it sums up a really big problem that, for example, Burnley, I think, will probably have eventually, which is when you have a team based on hard-working British players who are not earning that much money, but there's a lot of unity between them. And then when you try and transition from that into buying better foreign players, to play a more expansive style of play, how do you make that balance work? And you know, Stoke seemed to do it quite well because they came 9th 3 years in a row, and yet now they've been relegated, which shows, I guess, to Burnley, who might, you know, who may in a few years get bored of what they've got now and want to go in a different direction, like the possible pitfalls of that kind of transformation.
The counterpoint being that Burnley have shown this season that you don't need to do that to finish best of the rest, essentially. And if you kind of limit your horizons and think we want to finish 7th.
Do we think Burnley is sustainable, though?
No, not for me.
I don't even mean sustainable in terms of getting 7th again, but I'd say like top half or...
Well, the thing for me is, and you see this with clubs that come up, right? You come up and you stay up for 1-2 seasons. In like the second, third season, players that are coming in to be first team regulars expect a certain level of salary, basically. And if you're not paying it, then there'll be another team that will.
Yeah.
So you have to eventually get in line with the salary expectations of the league. If you don't, you can try and do it. You can try and nickel and dime it with guys on 40 grand a week, which I know for me and you is like a sensational amount of money, but for Premier League footballers is a pretty poor wage. These guys on 40 grand a week might not be good enough, and then you go down because you haven't got enough quality in the squad. You know, like I think Stoke is an interesting one because Stoke had the similar sort of model to Burnley, and they tried to expand it out. And Palace did the same. They brought in Johan Cabaye, and Cabaye really could have been a turning point for the worse. You could easily see how that one didn't work out, and it spirals downwards. And they kind of got it with Benteke. Benteke is the highest paid player in the history of the club. He's getting 130 odd grand a week, and he's had a terrible season. We scored like 3 goals in the Premier League, and so now you can't shift him. So you're stuck with the player, but you can't shift him, and fortunately they survive this year. But the whole point is you're going to keep building up the wage bill. The wage bill gets bigger every year that you stay in the Premier League, basically, and it's impossible to not play along with that. So Burnley are going to have to bring in guys on the big wages, and then you look at the guys who perform every week and it's like, okay, well, they want that money as well, you know, like guys who came to Palace on 2 grand a week, like Joel Ward, are now getting, you know, much bigger salaries. And it's one of the problems with being a surviving club, basically, is that you have to get in line with the Premier League, which means you expose yourself financially. It's just impossible to carry on.
That's why you need good coaching, a good coach to plug the gap, basically to bridge the gulf between expectation.
But Burnley did sell Andre Gray and Michael Keane last year to, you know, who I'm sure will have been attracted to the salaries on offer at Everton and Watford, and the team's got better in their absence. And obviously you can't do that forever, like Southampton has shown. But, I mean, and actually Southampton is another example of the same point. A team based on a kind of British core, which has brought in more and more foreign players.
Yeah. They have tried to recruit, I think, from, you know, basically from the English leagues. I mean, so Chris Wood, you know, was it Leeds?
Leeds experience.
And they tried to sign players that will fit into that existing kind of culture, I guess.
Jonathan Walters, I think, is a good signing.
He's a good signing, yeah. I mean, he probably doesn't do much, but he's there, and he's maintaining standards.
But if he's on the bench, you know, it's a guy they spent £3 million on or something like that. You know, really kind of nominal fee, really, in the Premier League. You don't get much for £3 million, which is why Pascal Gross was so good for Brighton. But they're getting Jonathan Walters, even if he only plays 25 minutes off the bench and occasionally starts a league game, you know that he's going to follow Sean Dyche's orders to the letter.
Great for dressing room, Walter, as well.
Precisely. Exactly. And Matty Etherington was saying the same sort of points that you made about Stoke, Jack, after the game, after they'd been relegated. He looked at the transfers in, transfers out, and the guys that have come in, like in Bueller and all these players who just basically, and what Butland said, they're not even here. You know, it's not even that they're not performing, they're Affolai's not even here.
Lambert asked Affolai, Champions League winner, not to come in anymore. Don't come to training anymore, please.
and that is wild that you've got supposedly high quality players who are getting paid like decent bean and they're doing nothing. Yeah. They're doing nothing as the club slides into the Championship. Now, I think Stoke is a pretty, apart from the recruitment which has gone awry in the last couple of years, it's a pretty well-run club. The Coates family, fairly level-headed, and they've got some good, I mean, you don't know what the squad's going to look like in the Championship. They'll lose Butland, you'd expect, almost certainly.
Yeah.
Where do you think he'd go? Who's looking for a goalkeeper?
West Ham.
Is there no one higher up the league that's looking for a goalkeeper?
Huh? Liverpool, potentially. I mean, there was a link there, Butland.
And then
Arsenal.
I mean, they might lose Shaqiri.
Watford.
I guess they'd lose Shaqiri just because he's too expensive. But for me, like, he hasn't, you know, he's been one of the better players, but he's not
Newcastle.
Lifted them out. Newcastle like Carl Darlow, don't
they? They shouldn't.
Dubravka?
He's on loan, I think.
But I think it is a, obviously it's a shame when any team gets relegated.
I mean, maybe we'll come back to this later, but I think the gulf between the lower reaches of the Premier League and the higher reaches of the Championship has kind of compacted a little bit to the stage where it's actually possible to survive in the Premier League with really good, like Chris Wood, Glenn Murray level players.
Well, Newcastle have got a chance.
Huddersfield are an example of that as well, aren't they? Like Huddersfield have got an appalling squad, and they're probably going to, I mean, they've got, like, say, a 50-50 chance of surviving. What really makes the difference in the bottom half of the Premier League when it comes to staying up is, like, identity, unity, having an idea, and there's different ways of doing that, whether it's kind of Eddie Howe's Bournemouth or Sean Dyche's Burnley or Huddersfield. But as long as there's some kind of unity to what you're trying to do, then you'll probably win enough games against teams who don't know what they're doing, which is like the QPR example or Sunderland.
And we're already seeing it with Darren Moore at West Brom.
Yeah.
You know, he's not trying to like reinvent the light bulb or anything. He's just got them playing in a disciplined manner.
Hmm.
And he, I guess if there are players that can't play in a disciplined manner, then they're out of the team. That's just how it is.
In terms of the goal for quite, like, I mean, it's interesting that's happened given what has become the dominant team in the Premier League of the past few years, the money from broadcasting. But I suppose maybe it's the natural consequence as well of that we've never seen such a concentration of quality at six clubs.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, after the Stoke game, when it was on Saturday, we were kind of just, you know, idly sitting there thinking about it, and this discussion came up on Twitter whether Shaqiri's in the best 11 to ever get relegated. And then you start going through it, and most of the players I would have picked for it were basically from kind of pre-2005, which I was like...
Ravinelli
amazing players at lower sides.
Attilio Lombardo.
Yeah, better good players used to be more evenly spread out right through the league. And this actually speaks to what we were talking about the other day when we said how there is... You can't say that Manchester City this Manchester City team is 20% better than Manchester United 99 because of their points total. Because current Manchester City have a disproportionate financial advantage over the other 19 teams in the Premier League in the way that 1999 Manchester United didn't.
Yeah.
Like United 99 were on a much more even footing in terms of money and therefore like aggregate player quality compared to the rest
of the league. If you're one of the big six, you basically start the season on 60 points and it's your games against the rest of the big six and possibly a couple of others.
Which is what makes the Mourinho season like one of the most amazing things ever to happen in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And one of the best stories ever.
Yeah. That's a capitulation of it. Do you think it's... Because the top six basically have got all these extra revenue streams, and everyone else, the bottom 14, they get a huge amount of money for the TV deals, but roughly their revenues are all kind of the same. Like, you know, then there's not much separation between the rest of the teams in terms of what they're bringing in, because matchday revenue can only obviously be so much. Their commercial revenues are like okay, but and every club that size is trying to get a bigger commercial deal, obviously a better sponsorship deal, but
and the influence of parachute payments as well.
Yeah, and you've got Derby, Villa, Middlesbrough are in the playoffs. Now, they're all teams that have been recently relegated and kind of are solidly there. They're still on the parachute payments. Fulham, are Fulham's parachute payments expired? They must have done.
Well, 2014, they went down. Is it?
So this might be their last season of the smaller parachute payments. Mm. But, you know, you look at the top half of that championship table, and obviously they're going to be
there's a Premier League club.
But yeah, and that's what it, and it does feel like that, because Aston Villa
are
a Premier League club to me, you know, in ways. Wolves coming up. Wolves don't, it doesn't kind of offend me that they're in the Premier League. Middlesbrough,
they've got, you know,
a big side.
Who would it offend you that they're in a Premier League?
Well, you know, they get beaten every week. They'd be one of the smallest teams ever to come in the Premier League, and they weren't that far off the playoffs this year, were they?
No, they came seventh, I think.
They must be one of the most prominently known teams, Millwall, that have never been in the top division.
Yeah.
Have they never been in the top division at all?
No.
That's interesting.
They were in the late 80s.
Oh, of course, yeah.
George Graham, but never in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Which is all that matters, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
since 1992.
Their average, I mean, it's been better this year because they've been doing better, but in recent years, their average gates kind of hovered around 10 to 12,000 a lot of the time. And I previously, like up until this season... I always thought the issue with Millwall was that, you know, the money in the championship makes it very hard for them to be competitive in the championship. Yeah. Like they're a kind of big League One team, but in the championship they find it difficult. And so for them to flirt with the playoffs like they have done this year, up against, you know, when you've got Aston Villa, who will happily pay £10 million for Jonathan Khedira, and
they got a tiny
pay players £50k a week, is remarkable.
Tiny catchment area, though. That's the thing.
Yes,
because they're kind of hemmed in by West Ham to one side and
Charlton
and Palace, but really also Arsenal and Chelsea. Yeah. You know, anywhere in South London, Arsenal and Chelsea are big. Dominant,
really hard to get to.
And Manchester United, it's okay.
It's pretty hard to get to from anywhere in South London.
Yes,
from London Bridge.
It's easier to get to than Crystal Palace.
Not for me.
Obviously, that Crystal Palace is difficult to get to.
But that's got a massive sort of catchment area, the whole Croydon area. It's not hard.
Do you mean to get to the game?
To get to the game. But also that has an impact on, you know, obviously whether fans want to come to the game. Mm. That has an impact on hospitality and corporate, you know, takings.
Millwall do make a lot of money from filming at their stadium. It's like the go-to, we need to shoot a thing at a football stadium. We'll do it at the Den because it's close to London. And it looks pretty generic, doesn't it? It's just
the sight lines are quite good. But basically, that whole the big car park, you get a really like big, wide, unimpeded view of the stadium.
Yeah.
It's like the Paddy Power thing, wasn't it? The Paddy Power did film the kind of the generic stadium there.
But that is
20 minutes walk from my flat.
If you want to prove that we've gone incredibly off topic, we are talking about why Millwall Stadium is so good for filming television shows. We can't really preview the weekend, which is what we wanted to do. The relegation kind of battle this weekend, because we don't know, because of the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday fixtures, we don't know how it's going to shake out.
We don't know where we're going to be on Sunday.
That could be dead.
Could be 7 live games, could be none.
Tonight, spoiler alert, this is being filmed, recorded on a Tuesday. Tonight, Jack Pitt-Brook, set to my right, will be at the big one.
Yeah, Swansea Southampton. I think my first game at the Liberty Stadium this season. I think the last time I went there was Manuel Pellegrini's last game as City manager.
Yeah.
A draw. Which confirmed fourth for City. It was the day of the Old Trafford bomb scare.
Oh, yeah.
The last day of the 2015-16 season.
So you were very busy that day.
Yes, I certainly was.
A graceful man, Manuel Pellegrini. Much missed.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think, this is going to look incredibly stupid when you listen to this after the game, but instinctively, I guess, I think Southampton are going to win.
Yeah, so do I.
Like, Saints have been playing well recently. They won last Saturday. They should have won against Everton this weekend.
Actually, given they're playing record-chasing City on the last day, despite the nil against Huddersfield, there's an argument that Southampton
need to win tonight.
Yeah.
They have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Though I do kind of feel like Swansea's bounce has been and gone.
Yeah, that's true. They're playing Stoke on the last day.
Yeah, but if they've got pressure on them, it might be hard.
Mm.
Like, I was speaking to one Swansea player recently, and he was saying that Carvalhal, he's great, but it's kind of about belief and confidence. He's maybe not as good a kind of technical coach as Paul Clement was, who was very good at all the training ground stuff. But the problem with, you know, like motivational led coaches like Slaven Bilic is that it wears off. I kind of fear looking at, I haven't been watching all of Swansea's games, but looking at them from afar, I kind of get the impression that might have worn off.
So in terms of that, like the motivational thing, I wonder, where's it wearing it off? It needs to be a kind of choice moment, which is apparently why Klopp's motivation works so well, particularly for European games and that. Because, I mean, if you think about it, the opposite side of it, if you're in an office, not that ours is, that is a bollocking culture. So, like, in terms of, like, so if you do anything wrong, you just get a complete earful for, you know, 20 mm-hmm. minutes. And, like, when you get it that regularly, you know, it's one of those things, oh, here we go again. And you kind of just tune out as you're getting bollocked. And I imagine it's the same if the flip side is, if it's just kind of a manager who purely works on motivation in that way, that eventually it's just noise in the background.
The impression I get from Carvalhal is that he's a trainer as much as he is a coach.
Yeah.
I think he's quite heavily influenced by, was it Victor Frade? Victor Frade, you know, the Portuguese, like, godfather.
The king of periodization.
Yeah. I'm probably one of the.
I've heard that Rory.
Exactly. Did you read the book?
No.
Did you read the? I
do own a book about periodization, but it's by my hero Raymond Verheyen.
Yeah, right. I also have that book. Yeah.
Not the only Raymond Verheyen book. I also own. I also have it's called something like Football is Supposed to Be Simple.
Mm.
I actually have it in my bag, which is at my desk at the moment for some research.
No, I mean the Carvalhal book. The book that he wrote.
Oh, really?
Oh, he wrote a book?
Yeah, called Tactical Periodization, Developing a Know-How.
Wow.
And he kind of goes into really intricate detail about training, how you plan out a training session and how a player needs to, you know, physically work. And there's less in there about how a team tactically work.
After he's been in a job for a while, the other opposition managers just read the book. And
yeah, maybe they should read the book. there's a really good, like, chapter about how he... so he was. Was he Besiktas? Was it Besiktas?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how he's
Jack Perks. Perks
team. Yeah, yeah. Preparing for a game against Galatasaray on Saturday. It's basically from Sunday to Saturday. What training session? Who does what? And how they plan for it? And what he does every day? It's quite interesting. It's badly translated, but it's worth it. It's worth looking at.
Someone's done his research.
Yeah. Well done.
The only one in the room, clearly. Swansea kind of blew it a little bit. Bournemouth was a winnable game. They got something at Bournemouth, but losing 1-0 on Saturday was a big blow. Hopefully, Jack, tonight's game is entertaining and sets up. What do we want? We want it to set up Stoke Swansea as the big cruncher, but Stoke are down.
That's a strange game.
It would have been nice if it was a relegation decider, like one of those two goes down. But
yeah,
there's a real pathos to seeing two teams both going down in the same game. Reading QPR.
Reading QPR is one of
my favourite.
It's one of the best things that ever happened, just because it was so pathetic.
One of them needed to, like, whoever won stayed up, I think, and they drew 0-0.
What season was that again?
So QPR went down in 12-13 and in 14-15.
She completely forgotten.
I think it was the.
Oh, was it 14-15?
It was the second.
Oh, yeah, because Reading went down 2013. Yeah,
it was the second was it the first or second QPR relegation?
It was the second one. It was the second one.
But no, but if Reading went down in 2012-13...
And they haven't been back up since, have they?
This is absolutely brilliant podcast.
Yeah.
But it was
wasn't that the one where... Who was it? Was it Jose Bezingua who was, like, laughing on the bench as they got... Or Armand Traoré.
Oh, Christ.
It was one of the bad QPR fullbacks.
This is the thing about QPR relegations. They all just kind of blend into one after a while.
Yeah.
Chris Samba.
But yeah, they both needed to win and they drew 0-0. QPR played one striker.
The fixtures this weekend: Burnley, Bournemouth, dead.
Yeah.
Crystal Palace versus West Brom could be alive if West Brom.
No, if it's a draw if it's tonight.
Then they're down. If Swansea and Southampton draw, West Brom are relegated.
No, that's the only that keeps them up.
Oh really? Right. Okay. So West Brom have a remote chance, but on the final day. They play Palace, who are obviously a much better team, so difficult. Huddersfield against Arsenal. Huddersfield are still in the mix.
Could be. Depends on how they do at Chelsea.
Liverpool, Brighton. Brighton are safe, but Liverpool probably going to have to win to guarantee their Champions League spot for next year. Of course, they could guarantee it by winning the whole thing as well. Man United, Watford is dead.
Yeah.
Southampton versus Manchester City.
Could be the game where City get 100 points.
That could be City record chasing, and that could be Southampton going down or staying up. So,
God, poor Southampton.
That's probably the game with the most on it, isn't it?
Newcastle, Chelsea.
Well, I booked that. I suppose I should.
Newcastle, Chelsea not dead. But Chelsea, you're
no
chasing that.
Chelsea
top
or Chelsea.
Yeah.
Swansea, Stoke is likely to be alive. Spurs, Leicester.
could be very, very alive.
Yes, yeah, so Spurs could screw that up.
Well, they lost to West Brom at the weekend. What do you make of that loss to West Brom? Anything to read into it, or is it just a?
It does really feel as if Spurs' season has been killed by the FA Cup,
like derailed. Yeah,
and very possibly the revelation that Daniel Levy owns more than most of the players.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, the form since that is poor. Yeah,
they've collapsed since then.
They've not had a. There's not been a good performance really since then.
How do you think that? Do you think that genuinely plays into it? Do you reckon there is something to that?
No, I think I don't think. I think it contributes to a mood, and I think when your dressing room is so heavily dependent on moods.
It's quite odd, and I mean, football is quite bizarre. That kind of sums up the bizarreness of football as an industry in that sense. I mean, surely Daniel Levy, as the kind of ultimate figure of the club, should be earning the
most.
He
makes the club chunks of money.
That's how organisations like in the real world operate,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, it is odd.
The problem, I think, in these circumstances, is not usually like the players hear it and like, oh, that's a lot of money, whatever. It's more that the agents get annoyed and the agents get in the players' ear going, well, Levy's earning all this money, so we know they can afford it.
It's leverage, yeah.
We know they can afford it, so should we give that to you?
Yeah.
Particularly given that they're the ones who negotiate with Levy and say, well, I think my client is obviously worth double what he's paid, and then comes up back with a kind of an offer of an extra £4,000 a week.
but that's really, if an agent is telling a player, saying to a player, like, I think you're worth more than this, you could earn more than this, the player's not going to go, well, I'm happy earning what I'm earning now. You know, so it's the fact that the news was out there has probably destabilised Spurs because it's got into the hands of everyone else rather than just if the players knew on their own in a vacuum. I don't think it would necessarily be a problem.
No, it's probably what Poch would refer to as like negative energy or something like that.
And there's been
like quite a bit
energy
of that. Yeah, does, like so the going out of Europe, the FA Cup defeat, all the Alderweireld, Willy, won't he stuff. Mm. It's just kind of over the course of the season they've piled up, and so you know the dream of maintaining this really cohesive, positive frame of mind, just kind of.
And I think I agree. And I think Spurs, a bit like Atletico Madrid or any kind of overachieving team, are especially dependent on that kind of like we're all in this together vibe. And that is, you know, that for example is why Pochettino has to freeze out any player who suggests he doesn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Walker last year,
stuff.
Or Alderweireld, and Rose. And that, you know, but as soon as you can freeze out one player who doesn't want to be there, but when the whole team are like, hold on a second, this isn't fair, maybe I'm going to start looking elsewhere, then that's when you've got a bigger problem which is harder to solve.
Mm. It's a bit weird when I was Spurs now, like just as we're about to move, go into the new stadium and all that, they could have done how they ended last season now. Last season there was such a positive vibe, they finished second.
And destroyed Leicester, which they could.
Yeah. And now it's all just a bit like, and suddenly, it's quite abruptly come. But now there's a slight sense of, ooh, have they hit a ceiling? Should Poch, like, what's going to happen with Poch?
That weird comment about whether or not he's here next season.
Yeah.
Well, I put that down to contract negotiations, where the Kane stuff is more concerning just because you obviously read the story in the Times about England being concerned that Spurs rushed him back and that his recorded sprints weren't up to the same levels that sort of stuff. Without Kane operating at full capacity, obviously Spurs aren't as good a team. But the big question that everyone's asking around the country is, will this affect England's World Cup bid?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think what will most affect England's World Cup is the lack of a midfield.
Ruben Loftus-Cheek, mate, so I don't know what you're talking about there.
Or the lack of defence or goalkeeper.
I was actually quite optimistic about England's... I said that as an Irishman.
England are the eighth best team there. It's fine.
West Brit.
Yeah. I thought England would do well around November, and now I don't think so. That so much.
Oxlade is a big miss.
Yeah.
It's a big miss.
He's one of the few English players who was playing really well the second half of this season.
No, to be fair, on the Kane point, like once you have a player like Kane on the form he has been in for most of the last 3 years, especially in a tournament, like a goal, something it makes such a difference. So if he's on bad form now, just kind of further tug away at what.
And also, if they're in this situation where it is the Spurs thing's kind of tailing off, but being in Russia with England will be a completely different environment for the player. You know, I think mentally you're in a different space.
He's not set up for the we were discussing before the Beckham dynamic. Mm-hmm. He's had a bit of a rough time recently. He's going to come into the team and determine to do well, and then there'll be another. Then it'll end with some negative.
Did anyone catch the Clasico on Sunday?
We were on our way back from Arsenal.
Yes.
Okay, yes. I half watched it.
One of the best Clasicos in a while, basically. But it was just a terrible refereeing performance, that's all. And the game meant nothing, except Barca.
Well, I don't know.
Barca trying to go for the season unbeaten. But, I mean, it was just great. But, like, it was peak sort of shithousery. Mm. Like, Sergio Roberto got sent off for Marcelo elbowing him, basically. And the ref just lost control. Mm. The challenges are flying in. There's like...
Often the best games are the ones with nothing riding on them. West Brom 5, Man United 5. Like the entire League Cup.
but every Clasico kind of does get bogged down in this, like, it means so much, like it's so important. And like both teams played like they didn't care.
It's never a bad game though. Come on, like.
No, I thought it was great. I thought it was actually like one of the most entertaining games I've watched probably in 2018.
Look at last season's was brilliant. And that was when they were both going for the title, Barca needed to win, and Messi last minute winner.
Well, the annoying thing was this was supposed to be like the second to last game of the season title decider. At the start of the year when the fixtures came out, I thought this was going to be like brilliant.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like Barca won the title.
It doesn't often go to the last day. I mean, occasionally it does. But
it's been more than usual. More, I think in the last few seasons.
It's been like less than 3 points for the last three years in a row. I mean, it's just, you'll never probably get back Barca Atletico, the final day when Atletico won the title at the Nou Camp. I mean, that's just when the fixture list combines with everything that plays out in front of it.
Wouldn't be allowed in the Premier League, of course. I don't know if you see what sort of story that they don't let top six teams play each other in the final. In the final.
Because of potential for...
Why? It's crap. I mean, what terrible idea that is.
It's pretty safety, isn't it? Safety concerns.
No, it's because they don't want to depress attendances at the other games when the...
Because they don't want too many people watching.
Because there's all 10 games are on simultaneously. And if there's two top six teams playing against each other, say like a Chelsea-Liverpool playing against each other, they think that that's going to affect attendances at some of the smaller games.
The weird thing, the last day of the season, I think, is the one day where you kind of almost, you don't want to be at a match because it's a better experience when you're watching it at home and like you're in that situation where suddenly, we've had a goal.
That's St Andrews and the Birmingham City fans are in tears.
Yeah, that's you want to see the crying children. Sorry.
It's the best match of the day of the season where they kind of interrupt a match and they're like, right, we're going to go back to the Hawthorns now.
That happened the other day. The Championship final day. I don't know if any of you watched that. I know you're a big Championship fan, Miguel. Birmingham City smashed Fulham. Birmingham City smashed Fulham, which means Fulham miss out on the playoffs. Birmingham stayed up. Bolton stayed up with an 89th minute goal, which is
2-1 down, needing to win in the last sort of 5 minutes.
Like they stayed up with the lowest ever points total to 7 in the Championship. So that meant Burton went down. And Barnsley went down with Sunderland. So in the playoffs, we're going to have, as we said earlier, Fulham, Derby, and then the other one is Villa, Middlesbrough. So out of those four teams, I think we discussed the other week, you want Fulham because it's more convenient for you.
That was Jack that said that. Oh, I might have said that.
And
it's true, though.
We're all agreed on that. But I think the you'll probably go to at least one of those games, Jack.
I'll probably go to one in London.
Go out to Middlesbrough.
I mean, Fulham...
Middlesbrough, Villa.
Fulham, Derby's really interesting because... Fulham are football-wise probably as good as Wolves. They actually battered Wolves when they played fairly recently at Craven Cottage. They've got a really good team. They play great stuff. They're top of all the passing stats and everything. Kearney's brilliant. Sessegnon's brilliant. And yet there is kind of this lingering concern about Fulham. Like, they've got a terrible playoffs record. I think they've never been successful in the playoffs ever. There's like lingering concerns
Dobby's
about
in great.
About true about mentality and leadership. I think it was Tim Ream who was quoted as saying that they shit the bed.
Yeah, yeah.
and I can say that because it's a quote in the game against Birmingham. So you do kind of, I don't know. I wouldn't, having spoken to a few Fulham fans over the weekend, I know that they are extremely unconfident about this.
And the like the way that they kind of got into the playoffs, essentially, a lot of the time you see the team that was kind of going for one of the top two spots and ends up just missing out has a really, really bad playoffs.
To which we should add, sorry, congratulations to Nuno and Warnock.
Yep.
Cardiff promoted. So more trips to Wales next year.
Yeah, I mean,
great.
It'll be fun having them back just because they're so, you know, they're different from the, you know, this kind of identikit Premier League teams.
It's interesting that Warnock can still do it, though.
They've got Warnock.
It's the fact that you can still do it.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that they'll be terrible, and then in Christmas they have a decision to make about whether or not to sack him and replace him with Tony Pulis.
He's Mick McCarthy that way, isn't he? He's the ultimate championship manager.
You know those players that are basically not good, like too good?
Cameron Jerome.
Yeah, Cameron Jerome, right, Rob Hulse.
Darren Huckabee.
You know, like, we will, Rob Earnshaw. You know,
Colin Cole.
Neil Warnock is one of those. I think there are certain coaches that are of that level as well.
Completely, yeah. And that's not a criticism. I mean, he's very good at what he does, and that is an incredibly lucrative skill to have. Being able to take, like, how many teams throw millions at trying to get into the Prem and can't do it?
Yeah.
We can also look forward to lots of people on Twitter saying, Vincent Tan, I don't know why, he just reminds me a bit of a Bond villain. I don't know what it is, but he just reminds me of a Bond villain, and not really see why that's problematic.
Actually, if you're... I suppose the thing with Warnock, if you're a championship club who want to kind of have that broader identity, you probably can't employ Warnock, can you?
Well, the interesting thing would be a team or a club deciding to get Warnock in and then just sack him. Well, not sack him, but give him a big payout on promotion and go and get generic standard issue Portuguese coach for when you're in the Prem. Mm.
Do you think there's something in, I can't remember, I saw someone wrote this the other day. It was after Atletico knocked out Arsenal from the Europa League with ease, which was also since we last spoke on the podcast. Teams won't go for defensive coaches like Simeone because they're too preoccupied with the brand and this whole concept of entertainment. But Diego Simeone is probably one of the top three managers in Europe or the world right now. And do you think the same applies to, like, even now in the Championship, you're getting this where teams feel like they have to impress with incredible attacking football and stuff and entertaining football, where people like Warnock and people like Dyche have shown that you don't need to do that to get promoted.
It's mattering more and more. Even I mean I heard a story the other day that one of the reasons that ultimately Wenger is going is because of disquiet that was put to him about that some of the club had been concerned about the fact that they were relegated on American TV, that their matches weren't as prominent, but there were empty seats. So tying into all that, I suppose that the brand you have and the sense that this is entertainment is becoming more and more important.
Because I actually can't see why anyone would hire Tuchel over Simeone, for example. I know that supposedly I appreciate that Tuchel does seem to have some sort of like wired in genius, and he's plays attractive pressing football, and that's very kind of in vogue right now. But what Diego Simeone has done over the last few years is exceptional, and he continues to be a brilliant coach in terms of coaching a defence. Like, he's had different pieces in that defence and that team throughout the years, but they still, year in, year out, are the best defence in Europe for me. So, like,
I do wonder though, how does he himself need to be at a specific type of club? Someone, a kind of a defined club, if you know what I mean.
Right? Well, I think he needs to be the figurehead of the club, basically. Yeah. I think that whoever hires him, you need to be able to be willing to go with what
and
he
some
wants.
Clubs and fan bases are more amenable to that kind of underdog football than others.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Mourinho at United doesn't work.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
United fans want them to play proper football. And that, I think, is probably also the case with Arsenal. Like, why Arsenal fans, most Arsenal fans wouldn't probably want Simeone.
But Burnley will put up with it. and Burnley would take Brighton and Huddersfield will put up with it, and Stoke fans put up with it until they didn't, and it was their downfall, and West Brom fans put up with it until they stopped putting up with it, and then that was kind of their downfall. And maybe
they get bored of it.
Yeah, maybe they get bored of it. But I think
Chelsea and Simeone for me is probably the best fit in the Prem. I think I can't think of any other.
Robin and Roman wants to get away from that.
He does, but he wants to get away from a good manager. Like what? Like he's the best. Who's better than Simeone? Who's a better manager than Simeone?
Pep Guardiola.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. But he's taken. I'd agree on Guardiola.
Pochettino, maybe.
He's also taken. But I think Simeone has obviously achieved more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you'd probably have to say Simeone, wouldn't you? Although
Simeone's kind of done what Pochettino hasn't been able to do, which is not just overachieving is one thing with limited resources, but you know,
actually achieving,
and then crossing the line and winning the La Liga, the Europa Liga, or whatever else they've won. A Copa del Rey, two Champions League finals.
Yeah,
probably another Europa League this year.
I put Klopp on Simeone's level.
Yeah, no, I can see that's fair enough. But what
we could have the thing of, even though Klopp has obviously done well, he's won two titles with Borussia Dortmund, although as one prominent figure in the European game argued, that was when Bayern were shit privately, which is very harsh. I wonder if it's the same thing with Klopp as Pochettino at the moment, that they've got to start producing all this impressive football. It can't just be a process all the time. There now has to be tangible end product. There has to be trophies on the table. And Jack, that league title in 2014 is probably, given the modern game, is probably one of the great feats of recent.
And I mean, also, you know, he picked them up in the relegation zone as well.
Yeah.
When they hired him, they were in the relegation zone.
Yeah, like to drag them
all the way
up
the table.
Yeah.
Overtakes Barcelona and Real Madrid to win the league. He's winning European trophies, but he's won domestic trophies. I don't understand why there aren't English clubs going all out, everything possible to get him.
Mm.
Like a Bayern Munich, or PSG.
I had heard, though, like when certain English clubs have kind of tried to sound him out, he hasn't expressed that much willingness to work in England.
Yeah, he's keen to go to Serie A, isn't he?
I was talking to some of the Spanish journalists out in Madrid, and they just said he is not interested in going anywhere else. He loves Atletico. It's a good fit for him.
Yeah, Inter's the other one. Yeah.
It's a great fit for him. He's said about Inter and Lazio before. You know, he's talked about it. I think he does need to have that affection for the club that he's going to. But you'd be amazed at how you can make someone have some affection for you if you throw £15 million at them a year.
That's very painful, especially if it's
would
in
you
coinage.
Die if you got hit with £15 million?
Well, yeah, it depends. Like in 1p coins,
in coins, yeah,
in coins.
You're good luck with that.
Well, yeah, you'd die
in 50 in 50s though.
You could suffocate
in bundles. Pounds. Are they bundled up?
Yes, taped.
What's the thickness of the bundles? Like you're sort of who wants to be a millionaire
they're
style?
They're 5k.
Okay, bundles. 15 million.
Yeah.
All right, and a bundle of £50 notes. Say maybe like £2,000 in a bundle.
Yeah, it's like 20, probably like 20 grams, you reckon?
In one bundle?
Yeah, probably. They're not that
okay,
heavy.
So that is 750 of those bundles. You wouldn't die.
You'd get a bruise.
It'd knock you over.
Would all the bundles be like strapped, like taped up into a mega bundle, like a big brick?
Oh. Yeah. Are we talking one mega bundle?
Well, to enact this, I'm guessing you'd have to have all the money in sort of a cube shape, dangling from a rope, and someone would have to just release it and it would have to swing towards you, and like it might knock you back, but you're not going to die.
Why would they do that?
Because you've just been offered the job that Diego Simeone's going to get.
But what?
Someone's not following the conversation.
You'd ask a question, to be fair.
I don't know. Well, I just said it would be painful, but I now we've kind of moved from the realm of the conditional into the like
the farcical,
the you know, the like the worryingly hypothetical. It's
you don't get this on Guardian Football Weekly or Guardian Football Weekly Lite.
No, I mean, all you get is internal warring, which we managed to avoid.
Might well after that comment.
Hello to all the fellow listeners of Guardian Football Weekly. I think
we all just love football.
I've got no more football to talk about.
I mean, what about Fergie?
It looks like he's in there.
Well, fortunately, it looks like he's all right.
Is he?
Yeah. I mean, it was literally the nightmare scenario I feared for years and years in this game is when you're like on the 24/7 news cycle and you just don't want Fergie or Wenger to die at the worst possible moment. And then when I started getting texts the other, was it Saturday?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was 6 p.m. that, remember.
The first reports were very concerning. It was that he's in hospital. Darren Ferguson had to miss Doncaster's game. He was in hospital with, it has been reported as like a bleed on the brain, which is obviously very concerning. But you spoke to a neurologist?
No, yeah.
Via
that
Ken?
Sorry.
You spoke to a neurologist who suggested that because they'd said the operation had already happened and gone very well, while those hemorrhages are dangerous, the fact that they'd said that suggested that he was out the woods.
It was good prognosis.
And then today they said he's talking and fine. So
I think there was one story, again, this isn't necessarily, but one of the first questions he asked was basically how Doncaster got on his team.
Which is nice. Obviously, all the best to Sir Alex and his family, I think. I managed to stay away from it, but I didn't see much shameful clickbaiting of that, which would make a change. But I think Sir Alex going the day before Wenger's big farewell would have been too much for a bank holiday weekend. I think we would have imploded.
It was good Wenger, actually, before he said anything.
Oh, yeah, we should get this out of the way, because you really liked this, didn't you? How was the big Wenger farewell at the Emirates?
It's good, yeah.
I found it quite emotional.
Yeah,
it was touching. But a weird mix of emotions, not purely sadness. There was a...
Which other emotions?
Excitement, I think. Like,
there is a bit of that at Arsenal, yeah. They're now...
A lot of excitement amongst Arsenal fans. I think people just...
I look forward to that. Oh, sorry to cut across you. That's going to utterly dissipate on about the 13th of August when they're 2-0 down to promoted Middlesbrough.
I reckon Wolves are doing that.
Having appointed Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah. And there'll be lots of people screaming, Brendan, get out of our club.
Fraud!
Sorry, Johnny. What were you saying?
Emotional day.
I can't remember.
But that apparently, I also heard that is exactly why. Well, not exactly why. All of this is why Arsenal are very conscious of the need for an appointment that excites the fan base again. So which is why I'd be surprised if they go for one of the more esoteric choices.
The problem is...
Allegri is probably the kind of only...
Just excite the fans.
Yeah. But and to unite the fans as well.
Dua Lipa,
isn't she? She's performing today.
Her audition in many ways.
I literally hadn't heard of her before today.
You haven't heard Dua Lipa?
No.
Jesus Christ!
I've heard of, but I couldn't name. I couldn't name a single one of his or her or their songs.
You must know new rules. You will know new rules.
Yeah, I don't read Aura.
I've heard of Rita Ora.
Don't pick up the phone. On Instagram. You know you're calling because you're drunk and alone. Too. Don't be his friend.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, that one, right?
That one.
Yeah.
We were going to round off the podcast by talking about Grimes dating Elon Musk.
Where are we?
Fucking hell. I mean, so... Right, so do you know when like, there's a girl or boy that, you know, you like and you fancy, or, you know, and they don't go out with you, but then, like, to make it worse, they go out with some real absolute hammer. And... This is, I think, this is kind of what's happened with Grimes, who is a, you know, very well known, although probably not well known enough for you two.
I don't imagine that Miguel and Ed have heard of her.
No, but she's dating Elon Musk,
the guy who invented PayPal.
Yeah,
and is now trying to become like a space scientist.
Do you watch Westworld?
Yeah. No.
No.
Good program. It was okay, actually. It's gone down a bit. But one of the main actresses in that this year, Tallulah Riley, she married Elon Musk twice.
Wow!
Really?
Yeah.
By the way, if you want football talk, you can turn off now. We're just going to talk about other stuff. While we're in Culture Corner, this weekend I watched Hunger Games for the first time. The first two Hunger Games.
Is that culture?
Well, I didn't realize it was kids' books. I thought it was like
teenage fiction. I mean, teenage.
It's just like a kind of updated Lord of the Flies sort of thing with some extra autocratic overtones.
Yeah.
Good.
Not as good as it had been billed. I feel like it's been built up as this like massive thing. All I hear is people referencing the Hunger Games all the time.
Some massive things aren't good.
Yeah.
I have to say,
there'll probably never come a point where I want to watch. Okay. Also, Marvel Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Can't be arsed.
They don't bring out original films. The bloody Marvel films just get out of my face. We could probably end it all now. just one more question. Has anyone ever played Fortnite? Apparently that's popular.
No, no.
Is that the one that the footballers play?
Yes. Mm. Yes. I don't know. I've never tried it. Adam Hamdani, the Hammer, as he's known, promises it's really good. But well, it's actually, what
when we beat the Guardian in a 7-5 football match, Hamdani, the Hammer, he destroyed someone, didn't he?
Destroyed several people. He was our enforcer.
Bodies everywhere.
There were bodies everywhere. I can proudly announce we've signed him on a full-time deal.
Okay.
So that's the transfer.
Announce Hamdani.
Have we got any matches against any other media organisations lined up?
Yes. Although I need to tell you about that off air because I need you to put the final touches to an agreement. And with that, we'll leave because we've not talked about football for a good 10 minutes now. So to whoever's still listening, thank you very much. We really appreciate your patience.
We leave you with One Touch by Dua Lipa.
We will talk next week. That'll be the post-season review, etc., etc. Then I guess we need to start looking towards the Mundial this summer, the World Cup in Russia, where we will be doing, I hope, a daily podcast. So that's a nice little Easter egg for those of you with the patience and the grit. The grit to fight through to the end of this. From Johnny, thank you very much.
Thanks.
From Jack, thank you. Good luck tonight. It should be a good game. And Miguel and me, thank you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.